from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Afternoon. It's hot, it's cold, it feels like going through menopause again, but welcome to Oregon, and this is happens to be Oregon Update, which is coincidental, and I am Robin. On the other end of the table is Cliff.
Hi, good morning. How are you this morning? I know you're going through menopause. I don't know about that. That's something I have no idea.
Oh, it's fun. Everybody should try at least once.
Okay. I'll let you do it. Tell me about it. Not right now.
Okay. Not right now. Anyways, we got, as always, we got a lot on the menu to talk about. There's in Portland, one of the issues we're going to speak of is these requirements to have a permit. If you're a commercial photographer and you want to take pictures in the park. And also recently was a video that went viral called If I Wanted America to Fail, which also temporarily got his Twitter account suspended. So we'll touch on that a little bit. And the question coming up is, should football be banned? And we'll talk about that towards the end of the program.
Be banned from
what? Cliff, do you have anything on your menu?
Should put
I say again?
From what?
Should be banned entirely from college football. Should college football be banned, basically?
That's ridiculous. If they're going to do that, they've got to ban high school football. They've got to ban a lot of different things. That's going to decimate the entire educational system because football, basketball sort of prop up the finances for both colleges and even high schools get a lot of money from football and basketball. Well, it depends on what state you're in.
Well, I'm using a state of confusion, but speaking of states, let's get some business out of the way. You want to talk about your favorite cookie?
About my favorite cookie? Oh, sure. I'll talk about my favorite cookie. It's I have nothing in front of me. I'm completely lost. I don't have anything on the screen, so I don't know the address. You're going to have to help me.
Okay, dancingdogcookies.com. They are handmade individually by Tom and Kathy in Eugene, available at select stores in Lane County and available online at dancingdogcookies.com.
Yes, Skippy is a very good dog and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog Cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Yeah, check them out. They look really neat, too. So if nothing else, go check out the website, dancingdogcookies.com.
How they know that the dogs like the cookies. I mean, I don't know how many dogs can speak and let you know. I suppose they can speak by eating them, but, you know, you let a dog get hungry enough, they'll eat anything.
Oh, that's true. I get to go by the number of tail wags you get.
Okay. Tail wags, okay. All right.
Yeah.
They'll have to send me the formula.
How many, how's it rated?
How many
king wags are the wag rating? Say that three times fast. The cookie wag rating. See, I have an excuse, folks. I'm not a professional like Cliff is.
Right. I don't know. Professional what?
Professional announcer.
Tailwag.
Radio personality.
I'm counting tail wags. I've been doing very well lately. I don't even have a dog.
Gotta get. Definitely got it. I have to see you going next door. Excuse me, neighbor. I'd like to take this survey here. I want to give your dog a cookie and see how many wags I get for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch your dog.
Yeah, they'll come take you away, definitely, on that one. Anyways, I'm doing about three different things here, including waking up my wireless mouse. Couple things in the news. One I wanted to kind of touch on before I get into some of the meat and potatoes, and especially dog cookies, is as everybody, if you haven't heard by now, well, you're living on another planet, but, you know, we are into the campaign time for the 2012 presidential election, and President Obama launched his campaign reelection at Ohio State, and they were predicting an overflow audience, you know, out in the hallways, you know. They're sadly disappointed that out of the 20,000 seats available, only 14,000 people showed up. In fact, they were so disappointed that before they went live on television, they moved some of the people around so that it looked like that they had a full attendance, which I think is kind of funny. Obama gave a 37-minute speech reminding the audience that he inherited a severe economic crisis and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm still going on the wage wagon. Afghanistan, claiming that the country is now more secure. And, of course, he had to throw in a little bit about bin Laden as well. The event was presented by a lengthy warm-up of surrogates from U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, Columbus Mayor Michael B. Coleman, former Governor Strickland, and, of course, what would be a campaign without astronaut John Glenn. But this isn't the only time that Obama's history that you would expect that he'd fill up the stadium only to have a whole bunch of empty seats.
Well, I understand he's got more empty seats now. He's getting more and more empty seats as we go along, as time progresses, which, in my opinion, is a good thing.
Okay, I'm sorry, what, Cliff?
I say, in my opinion, the less seats he gets, the more empty seats he has available when he does a speech, is the best thing. We need to get some changes made in every party, in every race that's being run. We've got to, not just the presidential race, but states for, you know, House and Senate. We need to get them all changed.
Oh, yeah, and it sounds like Ron Paul is still in the horse race. I guess he just took, I had it on my other screen, he just took Nevada.
Ron Paul will stay in the race. He always stays in the race till the end. The guy that upsets me is, of course, Newt Gingrich. He's dropped out of the race finally, even before the parties, I can't think of that word again. Anyway, before the party has their big meeting, and he's dropped out of the race. So now we've got nobody left except Ron Paul and Mitt Romney. There may be somebody else in there. I can't tell. I don't know for sure if there is or not. But we've got the two main ones. And, of course, Ron Paul always stays in until the very end. And I think we're probably seeing the end of Ron Paul. He's 76 years old. That would make him really, really old, you know, 80 years old or so. So he's going to turn it over to his son, Rand Paul. How's that for getting close to Ron Paul? Rand Paul, taking over next.
Yeah, what would he call a daughter? Does he have a daughter?
I don't think so.
Huh. But anyway. Are you still there, Cliff?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You stop talking. Normally you don't just stop talking. I'm doing some, because I'm overmodulated, so I'm, while you're talking, and not talking long as I'm counting on, I'm trying to make some audio adjustments here. But anyway.
Okay.
But yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounded like you were overmodulating, but I thought it was just my system at the moment, so maybe it is your system. Maybe you are screwed up.
Well, I don't get into that. Just some people would agree with you. But anyways, it's going to be kind of interesting. But still, there's some people that are still diehard Obama supporters, and they're fun to talk with. And the interesting thing is about it. And if you're a regular listener to this program, yeah, so we do push Obama a lot. But I've also had this habit that when I do a search for or a news item, I try to be impartial, try to get as much facts as possible. And, you know, if there's something that if Obama has kudos going his way, I'll give it to him. You know, I'm not shy about doing that, but do I want another 4 years of him, especially with what's been going on, looking at the facts? No, I don't. I don't know if Mitt Romney will do any better, but unfortunately, I think of course, like I say, Ron Paul's still in the race, but hopefully all I know for sure, we can't continue another 4 years of what we've been going through, and especially for what Obama's been trying to push through. And it's just scary.
The problem we have with an Obama presidency, another 4 years of it, is we don't know what's going to happen. Regardless of what he says is going to happen, we still don't really know what's going to happen, because what he says and what he does are two different things almost always. And so it's time to finally try and get someone in there who at least says what they mean. I don't think Mitt Romney is as good as we can get, but that's as good as we've been allowed to continue on. I mean, I still think that Newt Gingrich is the man, but he's dropped out of the race. So it's down to Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, and Ron Paul doesn't have the numbers.
Well, that's true. And also, anybody that calls the talk shows, they treat the Ron Paul supporters as lunatics. You know, I hear this all the time on the talk shows, that somebody will bring up an issue and they go, "Oh, you must be a Ron Paul supporter."
Well, that's really too bad, because Ron Paul has some great ideas. He goes to a little bit of an extreme, I think, as far as what most people are concerned with. But he's actually got better ideas than any of the Republican and or Democratic candidates so far. And I don't believe that he would be, you know, the people who take the Ron Paul rhetoric as gospel. He actually is not stupid. He's very, very smart, and he wouldn't do it that way. He wouldn't change things radically enough to mess up the Republican and that. He wouldn't mess up the system as it stands. He would gradually change it. Nothing he has got in his that I've heard anyway of his campaigning has been so drastic that he would change things radically. He does present it that way sometimes when he makes speeches with the idea of impact, the idea that he expects people to panic and to get all carried away, and he does it work. It works out half the time, but I don't think he's so stupid as to do things halfway and go wholeheartedly to it.
One thing that I'm very disappointed in is with, especially the last 3 years or so, is Well, in general, when somebody, when we elect somebody to go into office, whether it's the president, Congress, or whoever, House of Representatives, we're expecting them to go in there with our good interest at hand, and that's not always the case. You know, sometimes, I mean, some do. Don't get me wrong, some do, but some go in there with the intent of, hey, I'm going to get elected. I'm going to become a millionaire. I'm going to set it up so for my own personal gain. So especially like when I'm out of office, at least that's more local, but issues. But still, when I'm out of office, so basically, what can this office do for me instead of going in there for, you know, what can it do for the country? And you would think that with the things that we've experienced in the last couple of years, like the deal over the birth certificate, definitely pushing the checks and balances of the Constitution, and with Obama outright stating that the Constitution gets in his way, and by going and doing the, well, since he couldn't get Congress to go along with him, is when he started using the executive powers. That why aren't we pushing to say, okay, we have these issues, let's learn from them and set it up so that they can't be repeated? Because in my opinion, it's just a sampling of what, like I've always said, what can you do if you have a rogue president?
Well, that's, it's hard to say. To be honest with you, Fox did a poll about whether you approve or disapprove of the job that Barack Obama is doing as president. And back in January, they started out, it was 65% approval. It's down to 52%, 53% right now, and it's sort of leveled off. But it's still more people approve of his job than disapprove, according to their poll.
Well, of course, as we both know, you know, polls can be manipulated to get the type of answer you want.
Yeah, that's true. But I think I would probably agree with most people say that Fox News is against the president, but I don't think they are. I think they're fairly fairly obviously fair.
Well, that's very true, but that's why you take a sampling or you listen to multiple polls, not just one poll, to kind of, you average them out, basically. And again, I mean, they're not gospel.
Oh, I know. The polls themselves are not gospel, but we've got to have some sort of a hint as to what's going on and what's happening, and I don't know of any other way to do it other than polling the different people that are involved, whether it's involved in the thing or not. And, it gives you an idea. The poll itself, you can divide it up into Republicans and Democrats, and it's amazing. People are voting and are by Democrats, by Republicans. They're not voting their thoughts. They're voting by the party, and that's too bad. That's one of the things we've got going on this year, as this season, this voting season. I think more so than we did before. I think we've got nobody's thinking with their own mind. They're all joining along with just whatever party they're in. And I'm hoping that this will change maybe a little bit as soon as we end up with the actual voting for the presidential candidates. We've been voting for a bunch of Republicans and only one Democrat, but sooner or later we're going to get it down to a maximum of one on each party, and then I want to see how it goes from there.
Exactly. And speaking of how it goes, as I'm a little lame, I'm giving out the phone number, 646-721-9887, if you would like to join us on any of these topics that we have or anything else that's on your mind. Feel free to give us a call, 646-721-9887. you've never called a talk show before, this is a good forum to do it. We will be gentle. But to do it, call that number, or you can listen to the program while we're live at that number, 646-721-9887. And if you decide to join us and contribute, you just push 1 on your telephone touch tone pad, and it'll come up on my board here, and I'll say, welcome to the show, area code so-and-so, and you can join us. Real easy, 646-721-9887. If you're listening to us on the archives, we still want to hear from you. You can always send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, and we always appreciate emails, except for that one person who, I'm sorry, Viagra just won't do anything for me.
By the way, looking at Real Clear Politics, which does take into account several different polls, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different polls, they're very, very, very close as to whether they approve or disapprove of the president's case. It's 48 to 52 is the spread, and it is literally 50-50. Half of the people are for him, and half of the people are not. And so he's not doing that bad as far as what he's doing, at least of what people's opinion of his is doing. Now, I don't know how involved people are in finding out their own information, or whether they just listen to what is being given to them. If they're listening to what President Obama is telling them, then they know nothing, in my opinion. So they've got to find some way of digging
in. And that's a good question, because the people that I talk to, most of them, I would say about 80%, are bitching and moaning about Obama, and I only know one person that supports everything that he's doing, but he hates the Republicans altogether. And like I say, I've tried to question him on the facts, and they just don't want to hear it. But other than that, I very seldom run into somebody that supports Obama.
Well, interestingly enough, from what I can tell, it's either you do or you don't. There's hardly anybody in between. You either really like what Obama's doing, or you really can't stand what Obama's doing. That's the opinions that I've gotten of the people that I've talked to. I don't talk to that many people. I go basically by what's on the Internet, and there's millions of different places you can go and get opposite views of what's happening. So I kind of go by the averages on that. That's why Real Clear Politics poll averages really do mean a lot to me, I think. And so it's 50-50. It's half people don't, half of people do, but it's very close. It's not a whole lot of people that think it's horrible, or a whole lot of people think it's terrible or great, but it's just right down the middle.
Yeah, that's the way a lot of people are, unfortunately. And like I said, when I talked to people, I was having a conversation yesterday with one of my coworkers about Obamacare. And again, they were thinking that when Obamacare passes, it's going to be free health care. And when I tell them the facts, it's like, you're kidding. It's going to cost that.
Well, see, again, they're not listening to what's they're not going in and investigating themselves. They're just listening to what somebody tells them. And basically, they're going to listen in this particular case to Mr. Obama. And when they're listening to Obama, you aren't being told anything. You aren't being said it. Nothing is being said that's worth listening to, because he may change his mind tomorrow. He may not even – I don't know if he even means it when he's saying it. I don't think he is. I think he reads what's on the teleprompters, and those are written by somebody else. They're not written by him. So he's just reading what somebody put on the teleprompter. He doesn't even mean it when he's saying it. So consequently, I'm just amazed that people will listen to him. He changes his mind as soon as he's off the teleprompter.
Well, and they came out recently. I'm not sure if it's a White House thing or not. This is been talking about this in the talk shows. The Life of Julia under Obama and under Romney, and doing the comparison. And, they're talking about how Julia's life would be under Obamacare, and it's under BarackObama.com, Life of Julia, if anybody wants to go see it. And it's interesting comparison, but if you also look at the fact that the way they're comparing it here, basically Julia's life is controlled by the government personally. And this is I think it's a slideshow. Yeah, it's a slideshow. And I won't get into it because it's a little long, but it starts from the age of 3 all the way up into retirement. I'll give you one page of it, though. Under President Obama, Julia is enrolled, this is the age of 3, Julia is enrolled in a Head Start program to help get her ready for school. Because of the steps that President Obama has taken to improve programs like this one, Julia joins thousands of students across the country who will start kindergarten ready to learn and succeed. But under Mitt Romney, the Romney-Ryan budget would cut programs like Head Start by 20%, meaning the program would offer 200,000 fewer slots per year. And the whole thing kind of goes on like that.
Well, actually, that means nothing as far as I'm concerned, because you're basing it on the fact that that particular program is what's going to happen. Romney will have other programs and other ways of doing it.
Well, that, and if you read this thing, it makes it sound like Obama is going to be there more than just 4 years. Like, for example, when Julia, I'm skipping four here, Julia is 22 years old. Under President Obama, during college, Julia undergoes surgery. And it is thankfully covered by her insurance due to a provision in health care reform that lets her stay on her parents' coverage until she turns 26. However, under Mitt Romney, health care would be repealed. Romney says he'll kill it dead.
Well, again, it's you're reading, the thing is obviously based on the Obama version of things, because you know, Mitt Romney has got other programs that he's going to put into place, and so it's a moot point. I was looking here at congressional job approval. You know, we talked about the presidential job approval being a tie most of the way, very, very close. But congressional job approval is very bad. They're 64%, well, actually only 13% approve of the job that the Congress is doing on the different political polls, CBS poll, Gallup poll, Fox poll. They're all way, way down. The congressional Congress is doing a very, very poor job of making the world believe what they say or what they're doing, mostly because they're sitting there with their mouths shut, mostly because they're sitting there steadfastly batting against each other all the time. We've got to, in anything, we've got to do something to change this attitude of the way people feel about what Congress is doing for our country. Because Congress, ready or not, is running our country, or supposedly is. Right now, I believe that basically Obama is, by congressional, by executive order, is starting to at least have something be done. And that, whether it's good or bad or indifferent, at least he's doing something. And I don't... I find it real hard to decide what to believe in that and what to think of his congressional takeover, his executive orders takeover. I mean, I understand that he's not the only one to ever do this. Many, many other presidents have done this as well, not maybe quite as blatant as he's doing it. I mean, he just flat tells you that he's going to take over the country. And it's just that my problem is that the Democratic way is not the way I would prefer to have the country run.
Well, and kind of along the same line, I just want to refer back to the slide here real quick, because this is kind of going along with what's in the news today about student loan interest rates. Again, Julia is 25 years old now, and they're saying under President Obama, after graduations, Julia's federal student loans are more manageable since President Obama capped income-based federal student loan payments and kept interest rates low. She makes her payments on time every month, keeping her on track to repay her student loans. And, of course, now they're saying under Mitt Romney, interest rates on the federal student loans would be allowed to double, affecting Julia and 7.4 million other students. Well, that's what they're voting on now in Congress, and Obama has threatened to veto the bill.
Well, unfortunately, this is, again, another absurdity, because the fact is the student tuition has gone way, way, way up. Student tuition has gone out of sight. It's gotten to the point where only the rich can afford to go to college. So regardless of how they're whether you like it or not, you can't get – and I mean, he's put a cap on the loans that you can get. And so you're going to have to go outside of the government loan to finish getting enough money to go to college. So you're going to be right back in probably in worse condition than you were before.
That's true. And since you cannot, since student loans are excluded from bankruptcy clauses, I mean, like when I went to college, for example, you know, I thought I had a pretty good plan going into, because I have a degree in computer science. And looking at my background and looking and thinking, well, here's a big building. They have computers. Not knowing that the shortly after I got out of school, we went into a recession. So getting a job in that field was a lot harder. It didn't pay as much as it did when I went through school. In other words, my point is things change. You know, even though I had went in with a plan as going to college as an investment in my future, it turned out to be more, I mean, like with any investment, there's no guarantees, and we had to file bankruptcy a couple of years later. But like I said, since student loans are excluded, that you know, and actually my loans went up $50 this last year too. You know, it's a burden. Now to give them credit, they have been they have allowed me to back my payments off for like 6 months period of time, give me a chance to try and catch up. You know, so they didn't have to be real hardcore, but. But even still, you can't get out from under them.
Well, it's the thing I've looked at. I've been watching what this University of Washington has been doing. The University of Washington is going up by 26% in the last just 2 years. Just 2 years, it has the tuition costs have gone up by 26%. Now that can put college out of sight, out of possibilities. Of lots and lots of people. I mean, probably 80% of the people are no longer capable of going to college, and the ones that are capable of going to college are not capable of doing it with one simple loan, whether it be government backed or not. So consequently, they got to go for two, and it's making it impossible to do it. It's going to destroy our country is what it's going to do before we get too far with it. And considering if we decide to let it go the way it's going, now we can change that. And of course, one of the biggest ways of changing that is to change the president and to change the Congress and the House, making it a lot more. See, it scares me because we're going to go from all Democratic-controlled everything to all Republican-controlled everything, and either way is bad. Either way is a problem.
Well, in either way, because the people are being denied their input more, that you know, government is becoming more of a monarchy.
Yeah.
In a sense, like I said at the beginning of the program, they're forgetting why they're there, and as they're testing their powers, like the executive order and other issues, as they're testing their powers, they're finding out, well, you know, this Constitution does kind of get in the way, but there are ways around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Anyway, 646-721-9887. We've had a couple people in the chat room. If you are sending a guest, unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio has yet to allow you to comment, but you can always give us a call at 646-721-9887. Go ahead, Cliff.
Well, I was just looking here. It says repeal of the health care law in favor or opposed. As to who is, this is, again, reading the polls, but according to what people say, maybe everybody's actually in favor of repealing it. Everybody is not in favor of the healthcare law. And by quite a ways, the Rasmussen reports that 19% of people said they're against it. NBC poll says there's 7% against it. Omnipac poll says there's 13% against it. And the Reason Rupee poll, whoever that is, say there's 13%. So they're all against this, the healthcare law. And so if we get rid of, if we allow someone else into the presidency, it's obviously going to go away real fast. Now, what happens if President Obama wins? How are we going to handle it then? Because then we're going to have the whole thing. Is he going to repair it? Is he going to replace it? Is he going to change it to moderate it a little bit to make it more palatable to people or not?
Well, the scary thing is once it passes, because the biggest question, the constitutional question, and of course the Supreme Court is keeping us in the dark, I think until June, is the biggest question is the Commerce Clause. Can the government mandate you to purchase a product? And if they decide yes, then chances are it's not going to stop at just making you buy health care.
Well, with President Obama in office, the opinion is that the government can mandate anything it wants to, because that's his way of doing things. You know, I'm going to do it my way, and that's just all there is to it. And so that's how it's going to be.
Totally agree with you on that one. But that's not, like I say, I hope the Supreme Court, because Obama's already tried to intimidate the Supreme Court justices and to get his way. And so I just hope that, I don't know, it's going to be very interesting.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Because, you see, the problem with that, I don't believe that Romney can debate as well as, for example, my particular favorite was Newt Gingrich. He could have debated Obama and won almost 90% of the time, but it's going to be real close. Romney is possibly going to, I hope, surprise us and be able to debate this whole thing. Of course, how much of this is going to be debates? I hope a lot, because I know we had an awful lot of debates in the primaries, and I learned a lot about the people that were running for the primaries because of those debates. I think I learned probably 50% of everything I knew about them by the debates themselves. They answered the questions as frivolous as some of the questions were, but most of the time they were pretty down to earth and down to asking questions about things that we wanted to know. But if we don't have the debates to go by, what are we going to do? You can't listen to what they say, because this seems to be running for a president or running for any kind of office is a license to lie. It's a license to tell or not tell a truth. And that's the thing we've got to change. Is we've got to. I mean, how do you know what to go for? How do you know who to go for or who to vote for or anything else if they're just lying to you all the time?
Well, see, that's where the internet comes in handy, because you can, you know, we have more information available. We got talk shows like this one and the network shows. So the information's out there. It's just a lot of it's just taking time and doing your research. And don't just go by the first 10 results that you get on Google. You know, actually look into, you know, dig a little deeper. It's all public record out there.
That's it is that. And unfortunately, how many people are using the internet to delve into the information that they're looking for? I mean, they just listen to what people say and accept it. I would venture to say 80% of what people are voting on is just what they're hearing being said, and it's what they're hearing, not what they're seeing. It's what they're hearing, whether they be listening to television or listening to radio. It's what they hear being said, and it's lies. A lot of times, it's lies.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this section up here and move into the other section. And again, I'm saying too much, which I've been told I do. The interesting thing happening in Portland here as I change gears. Recently, a professional photographer went into one of the Portland parks, and he was hired to take wedding pictures. And he was greeted by a city representative who said that he has to have a photo pass in order to take photos or pictures in a state park. And interesting enough is that, again, doing some research, it actually turns out to be true. The in Portland, Oregon here, they actually do have something called a photo pass, which are issued to one individual for the express purpose of still portrait photography or videography in Portland Parks or recreation facility. The pass permit is intended for shooting pictures or video of non-commercial clients or by non-commercial clients by a photographer or videographer. In other words, news people and such are exempt. So as the example that they give, a photographer is contracted by a couple to take their wedding photos in the park, they would have to get a pass. The pass is limited to up to 20 people. Anything larger has to require a special permission from the park supervisor. You are also required to carry insurance in order to obtain the photo pass, which also costs $150 per year. And they are saying that part of the reason for the pass is because some of the items in the park, 1,832 objects, are part of the permanent collection, which is owned by the City of Portland and Multnomah County. So if you go into the park, well, some of the artwork and stuff. So if you go into a park and there's this statue that looks like something fresh out of a junkyard that's supposed to be art, and you take a picture of it, well, apparently you can get it. If it's a commercial, I mean, you can do it on your cell phone or whatever, but if you're a commercial photographer and you don't have the photo pass, you can get in big trouble.
Well, that's ridiculous. The parks are owned by the people. People built the parks, and people put the you know, probably... Don't people actually pay the money or donate or isn't the I mean, it's all public money.
Oh, I agree. And one of the issues is that it's the difference between if you're out in a public area, okay, and I take a picture of you and you are the center of my photo. And especially if I'm going to use it, you know, for commercial purposes, I have to obtain a signed release from you because you are, you know, in the main part of the picture. If you are in the backdrop of the picture and you're in a public area, I do not have to obtain a release from you. That'd be the same thing. I would assume that if I go to a public park and say that statue is a backdrop, in other words, not the main focus of the picture, I wouldn't think I'd have to get a permit. If I went out there just to go ahead and take pictures of the artwork and then sell them, well, yeah, I can kind of see their argument in that respect, in a way.
But the artwork is public domain. Once it's in a park, it is now public domain, which means I should be able to take the pictures, I'd be able to sell the pictures if I want to, whatever I want to do with the pictures. It's simply, if they don't want the artwork in the pictures, then don't put it in the park.
Well, I totally agree with you because they're claiming that some of the artists that made the artwork is still alive and so therefore subject to copyright laws. But like you said, exactly, you either donated it to the public parks or the city bought the artwork from the artist, at which case, at that point, do they still maintain the copyright? You know, again, citing public domain?
Absolutely not. Once it's put in a public park, it is then public domain. I mean, that's the idea. I mean, if I put something on the sidewalk, you can't stop people from taking pictures of it. And to say that you can stop people from taking pictures of it is ridiculous because this is the public sidewalk. I can take pictures of things on a public sidewalk. I can take pictures of the buildings. I can take pictures of the fire hydrants. I can take pictures of a parks, of any kind of a a statue or anything else that's out there. Once it's on the public property, it's up for grabs, as far as I'm concerned. If that's not the case, then we've got to change everything in laws. I mean, everything has got to be changeable, and we're not going to do that. That's the idea of living. That's the idea of freedom. That's the idea of living in free countries, is we can take pictures of public places.
Well, and if you take that to the extreme, it's like, well, okay, follow this scenario. You own a car, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, chances are, I'm just going to say, let me ask this. What make is the car that you own?
Ford.
Okay. Chances are that Ford that you own is when Ford and Fisher, I don't know if bodies are still made by Fisher or not, when it was designed, chances are it's a copyrighted design. Chevy just can't come right out and make a clone of that car because of copyright. So they own the copyright to that, but you own the car. Now, under the same logic of the artwork in the park, anybody that takes a photograph of your car for profit, whether it be a commercial photographer or the city, for example, like, say, Photo Radar, because that's a for-profit thing, or any other type of a photograph, should not be able to take a picture of your vehicle because your vehicle is a copyrighted item.
Actually, no, it's not. I mean, technically speaking, once they've built that car, once Fisher, body by Fisher, if you wish, has authorized them to build cars with that body, they've lost the rights to what you can do with it. If Ford is the one making the car and using that body, then General Motors or Chrysler can't take that body and use it exactly, but they can make one that looks so much like it that it's not even funny and call it their own. So let's face it, they all look alike anyway. I mean, there's so little differences in cars nowadays. As soon as one comes out, the other comes out just like it. And you can't, there are certain limits to what you can do to make things private.
Well, yeah, but see, under my same logic, if you are to apply that to the parks, if an artist develops an artwork and it falls under copyright rules that you can't take commercial pictures of it, then what about anything else that is copyrighted or patented for that matter, but more so copyrighted? Wouldn't the same rules apply to that?
I would say no. They can't copyright the possibility of taking pictures. They can copyright the item itself, and you can't make another a copy of that item. You can't take it. A statue and put it in the park and make an exact statue just like it of your own and call it your own. But you can't stop people from taking a picture of it. That's just ridiculous.
Or a commercial basis. I mean, people can take pictures of anything, but the argument here for the permit in the park is that if you're a commercial photographer and you're taking a picture of the artwork that you're going to be making money off of, that's why they're requiring the $150 permit. So that's what I'm saying, is that if you are taking a picture of anything else, if you are taking it to the extreme, then anything that you own that is a copyrighted material should not be able to have a commercial or for-profit picture taken of it unless you have acquired the permission from the copyright owners.
I disagree with that entirely. I think I disavow being able to probably allow this to happen. As far as I'm concerned, I would rather that they take the item back out of the park and put it in a private showing. If they want to have that much control over the item that's out in the park, then they shouldn't put it in the park. They should find another place to put it to make it worthwhile. There are lots of private museums or places where you can see the art, and it does make a difference. But this idea of trying to make it impossible for you to take a picture of it or me to take a picture of it, even if I'm going to publish it in the newspaper, it doesn't make any difference. Once it's in the public place, it's public property.
Exactly, public domain. Exactly. If it's out in public and it's on public lands, then it should be automatically considered, you know, public domain, especially if you donated it.
And so I don't
purchase it.
I don't believe that it owns the park. The people of Portland own the park, and thus the people of Portland can take the picture. It's not Portland as a. Is there an entity of Portland? I mean, Portland doesn't own anything.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I didn't mention this. If you are a non-city resident, that permit's going to cost you 30% more.
Well, I don't care whether you are or whether you aren't. It shouldn't make any difference. I mean, it's a that means that they can take any road they want to in Portland and charge admission for you to drive on it.
Exactly. Well, and what they're trying to do in Portland as well with the toll roads.
But well, they're doing that.
And what's kind of funny is that, and what some of the people are calling art. Okay, Grant, I'm not. I'm kind of an amateur artist, but some of the stuff that they put in the parks that they call art is stuff that I just took to the junkyard about 3 weeks ago.
Exactly. I mean, it's ridiculous as to what is and isn't the art. And of course, that isn't just happening now. That's been happening since the beginning of time. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's selling for millions of dollars that I think is stupid.
Yeah. So, well, it's stupid to me. It's like, okay, well, if you guys would pay me big bucks to go display this somewhere, great. I'd rather pay you that than what it cost me to go haul it away.
Yeah.
Anyway, 646-721-9887, if you happen to find this show, as we are apparently not, as part of what we are paying for, by the way, being promoted on the Blog Talk Radio's homepage. We are going to have a little chat with them about that, because otherwise, you know, if you happen to find us, which looking at the homepage right now only shows us as being live chat with, not under the live and upcoming shows. And if this is free, I wouldn't be making such a big stink of it all the time. 646-721-9887. We got 37 minutes remaining in the program. I want to touch on another thing that went viral this year. And what makes it kind of interesting is that it's a video that was put out by Free Market America. And the title of it is... going through my notes here. I'm sorry. I need my third doctor. Wow. The title of it is If I Wanted to... Yeah, I lost my notes here. I apologize. If I Wanted to Ruin America, or something similar to that. I'll get to it here in a second. If I Wanted America to Fail is a video. And what's interesting is that Twitter suspended the account on that one, but however, they kept the Twitter site for Kill Zimmerman. And what's interesting about this video, and I'm going to go ahead, it's a 4 minute long video, I'm going to go ahead and play it here in a few minutes. But what's interesting is the fact that, you know, what brought it to attention to everybody is the fact that of what it's saying, which I don't think I can disagree too much with, but the fact that Twitter also took it off. Although they did bring it back after a lot of complaints, though. Go ahead, Cliff.
If I wanted America to fail, to follow, not lead, to suffer, not prosper, to despair, not dream, I'd start with energy. I'd cut off America's supply of cheap, abundant energy. I couldn't take it by force, so I'd make Americans feel guilty about using the energy that heats their homes, fuels their cars, runs their businesses, and powers their economy. I'd make cheap energy expensive, so that expensive energy would seem cheap. I would empower unelected bureaucrats to all but outlaw America's most abundant sources of energy. After banning its use in America, I'd make it illegal for American companies to ship it overseas. If I wanted America to fail, I'd use their schools to teach one generation of Americans that their factories and their cars will cause a new ice age. And I'd muster a straight face so I could teach the next generation that they're causing global warming. When it's cold out, I'd call it climate change instead. I'd imply that America's cities and factories could run on wind power and wishes. I teach children how to ignore the hypocrisy of condemning logging, mining, and farming while having roofs over their heads, heat in their homes, and food on their tables. I would never teach children that the free market is the only force in human history to uplift the poor, establish the middle class, and create lasting prosperity. Instead, I demonize prosperity itself so that they will not miss what they will never have. If I wanted America to fail, I would create countless new regulations and seldom cancel old ones that would be so complicated that only bureaucrats, lawyers, and lobbyists could understand them. That way, small businesses with big ideas wouldn't stand a chance. And I would never have to worry about another Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, or Steve Jobs. I would ridicule as flat earthers those who urge them to lower energy costs by increasing supply. And when the evangelists of common sense try to remind people about the laws of supply and demand, I'd enlist the sympathetic media to drown them out. If I wanted America to fail, I would empower unaccountable bureaucracy seated in a distant capital to bully Americans out of their dreams and their property rights. I'd send federal agents to raid guitar factories for using the wrong kind of wood. I'd force homeowners to tear down their own homes built on their own land. I'd make it almost impossible for farmers to farm, miners to mine, loggers to log, and builders to build. Because I don't believe in free markets, I'd invent false ones. I'd devise fictitious products like carbon credits and trade them in imaginary markets. I'd convince people that this would create jobs and be good for the economy. If I wanted America to fail, for every concern, I'd invent a crisis, and for every crisis, I'd invent a cause, like shutting down entire industries and killing tens of thousands of jobs in the name of saving spotted owls. And when everyone learned the stunning irony that the owls were victims of their larger cousins and not people, it would already be decades too late. If I wanted America to fail, I'd make it easier to stop commerce than to start it, easier to kill jobs than create them, more fashionable to invent success than to seek it. When industries seek to create jobs, I'd file lawsuits to stop them, and then I'd make taxpayers pay for my lawyers. If I wanted America to fail, I would transform the environmental agenda from a document of conservation to an economic suicide pact. I would concede entire industries to our economic rivals by imposing regulations that cost trillions. I would celebrate those who preach environmental austerity in public while indulging a lavish lifestyle in private. I convince Americans that Europe has it right and that America has it wrong. If I wanted America to fail, I would prey on the goodness and the decency of ordinary Americans. I would only need to convince that all of this is for the greater good. If I wanted America to fail, I suppose I wouldn't change a thing.
And that's the ironic part about it right there. If you wanted America to fail, don't change a thing.
Well, that's why we're having an election. So that we can change a few things.
But he pretty much sums it up pretty good, doesn't he?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know because I couldn't hear it. I don't know what it sounded like on the air, but it was almost unlistenable to what I could hear.
Yeah. But well, from what I was listening on the monitor, it wasn't the best quality. So I do apologize for the quality of it, but. But basically, for what Cliff couldn't hear, it brought up a lot of points that is going on now, and that's why at the end of it he says, you know, if I want America to fail, I wouldn't change a thing. But like Cliff said, we need to change because we are in a downward, I'm going to sound like Glenn Beck, we are in a downward spiral that we cannot keep going because we're going to get to a point that we're not going to be able to pull ourselves out of it.
I really think we don't have to worry too much about it because whether you like it or not, this can all boil down to economically controlled how much money you've got, how much money you don't have, whether you have a job, whether you don't have a job, that's going to make a lot of difference. And it's not changing fast enough to accomplish anything at this point and in time. And we are things, you know, if we perhaps, for some possible reason, allow another 4 years of Democratic control, if you wish, Obama, if you want to put it that way, things are going to either go so far, so bad, things are going to get so worse, so much worse, that people are going to go in flocks. I mean, I well, if it keeps going exactly the way it is, I wouldn't expect Mr. Obama to make it through 4 more years. He'd be impeached, be thrown out of office. However, some way or another, people will not put up with this longer, because if jobs get worse. But we're slowly, see, people in the United States forget that there's the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is for better or worse, they're having the same problems that we are. And they're going to make a difference as to what happens in the United States, whether we like it or not. It's not just entirely us that makes a difference as to what happens. France just voted in a new president. Sarkozy is gone. We've got about 6 different countries in European Union that are breaking up, basically, are going to break up the European Union. They're changing their minds. Everything is changing. And so it's going to happen regardless of whether we changed and do things differently or not. We're going to have to pay attention to what is happening in the rest of the world, because the rest of the world can collapse around us, and it's about to do it. So, you know, things are going to change. The big thing is we may be run by China. China may be making all the rules soon. Who knows? And so there's so many different things to look at and so many different things to consider to make any decisions as to how to change what we want to change. But basically, I feel we've got to start with this election. We need to change the president, and we need to change about 50% of our Democratic Congress, whether it be the House of Representatives or the whatever it happens to be. But we've got to change at least half of it, and it's got to happen at this particular election. And I think I can't believe people aren't paying attention to what's happening.
Well, it's just, okay, like the issue about the Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood wanting to put a total cell phone ban, meaning that if your engine's running, you can't be on any phone at all, Bluetooth or otherwise. Lars Larson, last Monday, made this one of his 3 topics on the program, and he only got 1 caller to talk about it. This is something that affects everybody, not just commercial drivers. And you'd think people would be in an uproar over it, and they're more concerned about other issues that really don't directly affect them.
I disagree. I think they're just as concerned about that. It's just that they almost everybody realizes that this is wrong, that this is bad, that something has to be done, and that is one way of answering the question. Everybody knows they're doing wrong with these cell phones, and so they know that something's probably going to be done about it. And, you know, just banning them entirely is one way to do it. So I don't think that the people don't have an opinion. I think they all know that they screwed up, and they screwed up big time, and so they're going to let it happen.
Well, you can bet that as soon as they start, just like the seatbelt, you know, which started out at not being a primary enforcement thing, and sold, well, you know, we're not going to go after you unless you happen to see you run a red light, have a burned out tail light, stop you for some other reason. Then it became a primary enforcement issue. And then it became they had stings to make sure you're wearing seatbelts. well, that's just what's going to happen with the cell phones. But the whole point is people aren't, it affects everybody. And just to back up your point you're saying about the election, people aren't getting involved. They don't care. It's just like, how does it affect me personally?
I think more to the effect, more to the point, is people are aware that it does affect them personally. People are aware that it's a bad thing to do. People are aware that they shouldn't be talking on the phone while they're in the car, and so they're going to be okay with it. People are aware that not wearing your seatbelt could possibly kill you, and so they're okay with it. More people are accepting the fact of the law than are not. I think people are going to let it happen just because they know they're wrong. They're doing wrong.
Well, it's the same thing about, say, the upcoming election, why people aren't getting involved. They're just going to let it happen because they really don't think that they can make a change.
No,
but see, there I'll disagree. There I'll disagree because just like with the farm bill, the proposed farm bill, that got changed within 48 hours of being announced of how much it's actually going to affect people, and they stood up. I'm very proud of the people for writing in and making noise. They stood up and actually got the Labor Secretary to withdraw that proposal. They may introduce it again after the elections, but at least for now, they withdrew that proposal.
Well, let's face it, who knows? Maybe people are sitting back and thinking, this is such a big thing, this is such a complete absurdity, they don't think you could possibly have a law introduced that says they can't use their cell phone in the car. First of all, people perhaps don't think that you can enforce it. Can you enforce it? And if you do try to make it a law, good luck to try to enforce it. So maybe if they make the law and they try to enforce it, then people can realize it's actually affecting them, and then they'll do something about it. But I really think that people are aware that the telephone in the car is a bad thing, and they are aware that not wearing seatbelts is a bad thing. It's a different thing than not voting is a bad thing. Not voting is a bad thing because you have to vote one way or another. You have to do something in order for it to be a right thing. So I think it's a different the apples and oranges between the idea of not voting and not paying attention to the elections as opposed to not voting because to have the phones removed. I think it's just it's a whole different out. It's not the same.
Well, the common theme here is people just letting it happen, as you said. And the more that you let it happen, the more that they take away. And it's all about, like I say, power and money.
That's
but
why
anyway,
we
646-721-9887 if you want to give us a call on this in the remaining 20 minutes of the program.
That's probably why we should let Ron Paul win the election, because you keep taking things away. Ron Paul has the idea that he wants to give it all back to you. He wants to give everything back to the states, except for a very minor little various things that are obviously need to be run by the federal government. He would give about 50% or even 70% of all of the decision-making processes back to the states and to the local governments instead of the federal government doing it. And that can't be all bad.
Well, you never know. Just like, Ron Paul could be the horse that paced himself and then at the last minute took the win.
Well, unfortunately, I'm very unhappy because he's 76 years old, and there comes a point where he can't take the win. But I hope he passes the baton to his son, and his son takes it seriously, as I believe he is right now. I'm very impressed with Rand Paul and the things that he's done and not done, and I hope he takes the baton and runs with it, and perhaps maybe he'll be our president.
Well, there's no law that says that he can't be the vice president.
Well, that's true, too, except that the vice president doesn't accomplish anything. I think he'll run for president later on and perhaps could win.
He doesn't accomplish anything, but if his father runs into health issues or something else, and his father has to step down during office, and then Rand Paul can step forward.
Ah, I see. I'm not talking about this election. I'm talking about, because we've pretty much well decided that what's going to happen in this election, I think, and because everybody has dropped out, and I'm very upset at Newt Gingrich for dropping out of the office. He should have stayed in there at least through the Republican convention and stayed in there and taken and had a possibility of it being nominated as the Republican Party member for president, but he didn't. He stepped down ahead of time. So the only one is Ron Paul, but I don't think Ron Paul is going to get it, and that's too bad. But I do believe he can pass the baton on, and Rand Paul can do things enough differently, and he has enough time. I mean, see, Ron Paul ran out of time. He's been doing this for years and years and years and years, and there comes a point in your life when you're too old to do things, and we're there with Ron Paul. And I also feel that way about some of the people in the Congress. We should put limits on them to, you know, whether, I don't know, term limits, I think, but perhaps even how old you can be and run for Congress at any time, because there's got to be a point where you're too old to do that. I'm sorry.
17 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887. I want to kind of touch on our third topic, which is football, but I want to make a quick little comment here. This is a headline that came out not too long ago, and this is political correctness going weird. Scotland Yard blacklist bans the word blacklist because it's racist.
What? Scotland Yard bans the word blacklist? Okay.
Because the word blacklist is racist.
I see. We could get carried away with that. I mean, that's absurd as far as I'm concerned, because you can't just entirely eliminate the word black from your from the language because somebody decided they want to claim it. I don't think anybody can claim that word, ready or not.
Well, it's just like a chess game, you know, black is bad, white is good, et cetera. But, I don't know. It's political correctness going weird. Anyway, 646-721-9887. The question is, that's been going around the Internet and on some of the talk shows, is should college football be banned? They're saying that because of the amount of injuries that players receive from it, that it doesn't really do the student or the player itself any good, because they don't receive any compensation per se, and academically it doesn't do any good. But there's a writer who's the author of Friday Night Lights. His name's Buzz Bissinger. He's been spending more than 20 years studying the issue and hasn't yet heard a convincing argument that college football has anything to do with the primary purpose of higher education, which is academics. Bissinger asked the question of who truly benefits from college football. The players themselves don't receive any compensation, and the average student doesn't benefit by the program either. And I'm quoting him. He says, "I can't help but wonder how a student at the University of Oregon will cope when in-state tuition has recently gone up 9% and the state legislature passed an 11% decrease in funding to the Oregon system overall in 2011 and 2012. Yet thanks to the largeness of Nike founder Phil Knight and an academic center costing $41.7 million, twice as expensive in square footage as the Tonya's condos in Portland, has been built at the for the University of Oregon football team." And he finishes saying it's always important to feed those ducks. Well, being from the Eugene area, I have to kind of ask that same question, too, because the University of Oregon has grown in size, including that arena that he's talking about, and is slowly squeezing the city of Eugene out of the city. But, yeah, everything is centered around football. But, of course, then again, don't ever say anything bad about the Ducks if you're ever in Eugene, if you value your life, because people do take their the duck football very seriously.
Very, very seriously, more seriously than I can think of in about almost any other state. But as to whether there's any benefit to the ducks, whether they be football or basketball, of course there's tremendous benefit. There's a huge benefit to the city as far as business is concerned. There's a huge benefit to the city as far as restaurants concerned, as far as the amount of people coming to the city and being introduced to the city because of the football and because of the sports themselves. There are a lot of people who didn't even know anything about the city of Portland until they came here for a football game or something of that sort. So there's a tremendous benefit to the city. There's a huge benefit financially wise to the city, and then there's a benefit to the city as far as actually the amount of students that are coming to the city for the state of or for the U of O programs. People are introduced to it, not just people who are introduced to the football team, but people who are just interested in football but stay for other things. There, it's a huge, huge number that's involved as far as benefits to the city and benefits to the college itself. Granted, I don't know that there's much of any benefit to the actual education that you get because of that. But I don't think there's any detriment either to the education. So the benefit is huge as far as amount of money, as amount of people, as some different things that are introduced to you by the sports themselves, not just football and basketball, but all sports.
Well, this is the balance of it. I mean, most of the arguments that you made there is an argument that the football game should be separate from the college itself, which that I can go along with. But when the emphasis is more towards the sports than it is the academic function, that's where I got a problem with. Now, also, but I will agree on this, but it's unfortunately, I don't, now correct me if I'm wrong, is not the case. If the money, like say the University of Oregon, if the money that comes in would also benefit the school itself, in other words, lowering tradition, lowering the cost of books, then, yeah, I could see, because it's just like the OSU, a lot of their funding and costs comes from their patents, because OSU is more of a technical college, and so that helps keep the cost down. So if it was beneficial in that regards to the students, and it could be, I don't know for sure. Like I say, if anybody knows for sure, send me an email. Talk at krbnradio.com, then I can see it would be a benefit. But otherwise, my personal opinion is there's too much emphasis over it. Plus the fact, as they also are pointing out here, that the injuries that are resulting from this type of sports is something to be looked at as well.
Actually, I can tell you that a significant amount of the monies that's come into college from sports are put back into academic things. As much as almost 50%, I believe, is back into academic things. There's still a huge amount that is not. But that's not the point. The point is that a lot of things that couldn't be there are there because of the basketball, because of the sports. A lot of things that don't necessarily have to do with sports. But it's because, we get upset at how much time and effort is spent on the ducks. We get upset at how much talk and information is disseminated about the ducks, because we live with the ducks. But the fact is, an awful lot of the entire college experience is based around what they've learned, people have learned about the sports program. Without the sports program, probably most people wouldn't even know the University of Oregon even existed, very few, because that's how the news gets out there. That's how the information about the college gets out there. And then they can make their mind up once they've found out about that. They can make up their mind whether the college is worthwhile to go to or not to go to. I don't believe that the University of Oregon is academically superior in any way to other colleges. So they've got to have some reason for people to want to go there. And I think it's a good thing. As far as people getting hurt, as far as people getting injured, as far as, you know, we've had a bad injury and a person killing themselves because of sports, that's so minor. They're you know, one in how many years have done this. I'm not saying that only one person has been injured, but the injuries are very, very minor as compared to the other things that are happening with sports.
According to a 2006 survey, and this is from Scientific Physics, 2006, football injuries resulted in 460,000 injuries, anywhere from fractured ribs, chipped teeth, strained necks, head lacerations, dislocated hips, and jammed fingers.
No,
basketball topped the list at 529,000 injuries in 2006. This is compiled by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission on National Electronic Injury Surveillance System.
Now, is that high school? Is that everything? Is that professional sports too?
I believe it. It just says it's the sport and the type of injury. It doesn't break it down to that, at least not in the sport.
I think it's probably a combination of everything. And granted, it's a high number, but you know, you know the possibilities of getting hurt when you go into the sport. And I guess you know what's coming, and you have to take a chance of happening.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, well, in that case, should football, basketball, since they're also very high, bicycling is also, they said here, 490,000 people caught in the spokes, head injuries from falls, slipping while carrying bicycles, collision with cars. Should people under 17, just like the Farm Labor Bill, be prohibited from playing these sports because of the risk of injury?
If you do any one of those things, then you've got to eliminate people driving. Because that's worse than anyone.
Well, in that case, why let anybody leave the house? Oh, wait a minute. Most injuries happen in the house. Well, now you can't go home.
So we're back down to you know the possibilities, and you take your chances.
Well, or like the phrase that I came up with, we live in a bubble wrap society. I'm sorry, you can't go out of the house or you can't get out of bed unless you're wearing your bubble suit.
Well, we'd like to. We'd like to eliminate every possibility of getting hurt, but we know it's not possible. And so consequently, we've simply got to accept the possibilities that we're going to get hurt, and we got to weigh the possibilities into the whole program and then decide whether or not we want to. And it's up to the individual. I mean, I know goddamn good and well that every time I step out and get in the car, I have a possibility I can get in a wreck. And yet I don't seem to worry about that. I seem to get in the car and have it happen. So, you know, in my opinion, I think driving is probably the worst thing that possibly could happen.
Well, and just like here, here's my excuse for not showing up at the gym tomorrow. 269,400 or 249,000 injuries due to exercise or exercise equipment resulting from twisted ankles, cut chins from tripping on treadmills, head injuries from falling backwards from exercise ball, ankle sprains from jumping rope.
Okay.
If you want to get out of going to the gym, remember that figure. 269,000 people got hurt in 2006 by going to the gym.
So then consequently, I don't want to do anything to do with exercise because so many people get hurt in exercising, and so that's why I weigh 300 pounds and consequently I'm not going to change my weight. But then on the same token, what are the possibilities of my having illnesses and such that are gauged on my weight? I mean, you can't win in this game, so you have to kind of choose your choices. You have to choose whether you want to play or not play, and whether you're willing to take the risk. And in all of the options that you have, regardless of what they are, there are some risks.
Well, even if you want to get right down to brass tacks, And unless you grow your own food, you take a risk on any of the food that you eat, because we're trusting that the providers, the people that package our food, the people that make our food, are doing what they're supposed to do and that it's safe for us.
Well, that's true. And right now, there's lots of things that are not safe that we are eating every day, and I'm sure of it. And the business of what's good and what's bad, it's regardless, you know, it's hard as hell. And it's even hard to tell, you know, you start speaking of food, what's good and what's bad. You can't even find that part on the internet because, you know, everybody has their opinion. You know, I like to have everything grown free range, but is that good or is that bad? Everything's got at risk.
Well, that's true. And you get, like you said, to know the risk, to minimize the risk. But there's also the thing, too, that sometimes risk is good if it's smart. We learn, like when you and I were growing up, Cliff, we got to ride the bicycle without the helmet. And, yes, we fell off our bicycle, but you know what? We learned from that. We stuck the screwdriver in the light socket or in the outlet. Yeah, you may have got shocked, but you didn't do it again.
Well, some people did learn by just simply being told not to do it. Some people listen to other people who have experience in the thing and don't do it. It's just, you got to, it's your personal experience and your personal opinion and that has to count in everything that we do.
Well, yeah, and of course, then again, like you say, some people learn by telling, yeah. How many times have we said, boy, I sure wish I would have listened to my parents.
Yeah, really. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, we can then.
I never said that. Never, ever.
Ever?
Ever. I listened to my parents, right.
Yeah, I didn't listen to mine either, and that's why I do. Anyways, but that's neither here or there. But I was going to say something totally interesting. I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that we are out of time, is what I was going to say. And I wanted to thank everybody that has tuned in today. And again, let us know what you think about the program. And if you have any suggestions, of course, always welcome to send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. Cliff, do you have any final words?
Not that I can think of. I certainly appreciate your being a guest of us today. And come back again next week and shoot again.
Be back next Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific time, and we'll see you then. So everybody, enjoy the sun while we got it. Enjoy that full moon or that moon that was really close the other day. I hope you got a good vision of it, and we'll see you next week.
To check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.